the ultimate violation of parental rights.
You very much have this view in Britain that the state knows better than the parents, and I think this should lend us as Canadians a bit of foresight into what happens if we allow even a shred of parental rights to be removed from us.
On the feature this week, Jonathan Van Maren with a look at the underlying issues in the Alfie Evans case in Britain. In the news, more legal action on the Canada Summer Jobs Attestation, a new all-party committee to look at human trafficking and sex slavery, bubble zone legislation has passed second reading in Alberta, and a defense of incrementalism in the abortion debate.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The federal government's controversial attestation requirement for the Canada Summer Jobs Program is being challenged in court again. Earlier this year, Toronto Right to Life launched a lawsuit over the attestation requirement on the basis that the demand for applicants to affirm so-called charter rights on reproductive choice, in other words, express support for the government's position on abortion, was a violation of the freedom of religion and freedom of conscience guarantees in the Charter of Rights. Now, a small irrigation company in Brooks, Alberta, has launched a similar suit. It's believed to be the first legal case involving an organization in the private sector, a group that is not explicitly tied to church or faith-based organizational structures like summer camps, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, or pro-life organizations. The company is being represented by John Carpe of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms in Calgary. He says the whole attestation file shows the government simply doesn't understand what conscience rights really are.
Even the Prime Minister and the Labour Minister, Patty Hajdu, going out publicly and stating at town halls, you know, we're telling you that it's only intended for pro-life groups, so if you're not a pro-life group, you can just go ahead and sign because it's intended for pro-life groups. Well, it's just appalling that you'd have a Prime Minister and a Cabinet Minister saying, you know, just sign an attestation and say that you agree with the words even if you don't, because it doesn't really count, it doesn't really matter. It does matter if you attest to something, and if you don't agree with it, you can't attest to it. Certainly, this court action is important for showing the courts that this is not just about pro-life groups. It impacts private businesses as well.
The Canadian Council of Christian Charities is also still compiling a list of organizations that were denied Canada Summer Jobs funding because of their refusal to sign the attestation. Lawyer Barry Busey says there could be a number of lawsuits announced in the next few weeks, and he adds he's aware that there are, quote, other non-faith-based groups, which will also be filing court papers soon. Meantime, Toronto Right to Life amended its lawsuit last week to include the notion that the government acted in bad faith when it imposed the attestation requirement. That's based on the notion that when the government announced the restrictions, the Labour Minister said they'd heard, quote, a whole bunch of complaints about pro-life groups receiving government dollars in earlier years. But in court papers filed in the ongoing suit, there were only 6 complaints referenced, and 5 of those came as an identical form letter initially supplied by the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada. In the court proceedings last month, the government refused to answer questions about the number of complaints it had received. Right to Life's Blaise Elaine says the group was shocked to see that, quote, the only basis for the government's decision to discriminate against Canadians who hold different beliefs was just a series of requests from a single special interest group. He says the Abortion Rights Coalition asked the government to, quote, discriminate against Canadians with different beliefs than theirs, and the government went ahead and did it with no regard for the charter. Peace River Westlock MP Arnold Viersen has been selected as co-chair of an all-party parliamentary group to end modern slavery and human trafficking. Viersen says the group has members from all the major parties in both the House of Commons and the Senate.
We've modeled it after the UK all-party parliamentary group to end modern-day slavery. That's what it's modeled after. That's where we got the idea. There's a number of other committees similarly set up here on Parliament Hill. One to end genocide, one for cooperative and that kind of thing.
Pearson says the group will be looking at actions that have been taken in Europe and in California, where there's laws in place to force large companies to be accountable to their shareholders on what kind of corporate impact they're having on human slavery and sex trafficking.
One of the first projects that we're taking on is called supply chain reporting. We'll be looking at how we can bring forward some legislation around having publicly traded companies put forward a minimum of a one-page report as part of their financial reporting, seeing their impact on human trafficking in the world. In other jurisdictions, that report had to be signed by the directors of the company. So some companies, like McDonald's, chain in the agricultural sector that maybe has an issue, but we're pretty confident we got that under control. And if the shareholders believe them on that, it won't be an issue. The next company, a mining company that's working in Eritrea, they might say, hey, we got nothing going on, and people may or may not believe that. So that's what it's about.
Other co-chairs of the group include Liberal MP Robert Falcon-Ouellette from Winnipeg and Quebec NDP member Christine Moore. The International Justice and Human Rights Clinic at the Allard School of Law at UBC will be providing administrative support to the group's work. The Alberta Legislature is still considering Bill 9. That's a proposed piece of so-called bubble zone legislation to prohibit any kind of pro-life speech outside abortion clinics in Alberta. The opposition United Conservative Party has pledged not to vote on the proposal, either for or against. Leader Jason Kenney has labeled it a piece of political mischief from the NDP designed to distract voters from more important economic issues. UCP members weren't in the legislature when the bill was given first reading last month. ARPA lawyer John Sikkema says in one sense, Kenney's strategy is understandable, but it's not in line with the way the legislature is supposed to work.
It's the job of the opposition to ask questions. But we're in an environment where if the opposition asks questions, which is they're supposed to do, they're met with accusations of not caring about women, accusations about being pro-harassment. And this is, I think, very damaging to our politics. Rather than the opposition being shamed into not opposing a bill, they, I think, need to be pressured into opposing it on sake of principle. In other words, for them to oppose it isn't the offensive thing. For them to not oppose it, even if they share the concern about the potential for harassment, it's their job to ask the tough questions. They're supposed to do that, and we, I think, need to have higher expectations of our politicians.
The bill passed second reading last week. Only one independent MLA voted against it. The entire UCP caucus walked out of the House. There is still time for you to have input on this. ARPA has an easy mail campaign up on the homepage where you can write to Jason Kenney and the UCP caucus to express your concerns about their stance on the issue. And finally, a defense of the notion of so-called incrementalism in the debate over abortion legislation. We Need a Law director, Mike Schutten, presented at the God and Government Conference in Ottawa last month, and he says he was a bit surprised at the questions he was getting from some of those in attendance.
The questions predominantly were focused on I would describe it as an attempt to gain a better understanding of why, as Christians and pro-lifers, why should we be supporting or even advocating for a bill that would not protect all pre-born children. Our focus has been, probably the last 8 to 12 months, on an international standards law. And I think what's happening is that now as we get closer and closer to that becoming a reality, people are also like, oh, I'm not sure if I like this. So I'm like, okay, we need to take time to really explain this so people understand and get it.
So in response to those questions, Schutten wrote a detailed blog post on the issue, actually wrote it on the plane on his flight home from Ottawa. He says there are three main points to consider in this.
So the first thing is that what is not illegal is legal. Just because it doesn't say anywhere in the criminal code or in our Charter of Rights and Freedoms or anywhere that abortion is a legal right, by very fact that it's not illegal, that means it's legal. And when our court struck the law down in 1988, there was no law, so that meant it was not illegal, therefore it is legal. And then we need to know that new restrictions, so something that would restrict abortion, does not make what is legal more legal. It's already legal. Right. So whereas right now abortion from 0 to 40 weeks is legal, if a law came in that restricted abortion after 13 weeks, that wouldn't make abortion from 0 to 13 weeks any more legal than it is today. In a country where there are no legal restrictions, any regulation or restriction is a step toward protecting all preborn children.
Fundamentally, Schutten says this really comes down to being realistic in our expectations of government.
It's not the task of government to abolish evil. They can't do that. It's their task to restrain evil.
Back with more after this.
Planning is underway for the National March for Life. As has become an annual tradition, ARPA Canada and Jubilee CanRC in Ottawa will be co-hosting a Reformed prayer service. This year, Pastor Matt Kingswood will lead us in meditating on Habakkuk 1 verse 2 on the theme, How Long, O Lord? It will be held at First Baptist Church on Laurier in Ottawa on May 10th at 10:30 a.m. Contact info at arpacanada.ca for more.
On the feature this week, the Alfie Evans case. Alfie was the young child in Britain, just under 2 years old, who was at the center of a huge controversy over parental rights. He was suffering from a terminal neurological disease, and after his parents checked him into the Alder Hey Children's Hospital in December of 2016, the government refused his parents' requests to transfer him to other hospitals or to take him home. In the end, he died at Alder Hey late last month. The case has again highlighted the lack of parental rights, especially in Britain. To talk about this, I'm joined on the program this week by Jonathan Van Maren, pro-life blogger and activist with the Canadian Centre for Bioethical Reform. John, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Al.
I'm trying to get my head around the rationale that the judge used to force the child to stay in the hospital and to allow for the disconnection of the ventilator. I mean, what was the legal thing behind that? We'll get into the parental rights thing in a minute.
Right.
But how did we get into a situation where anybody could legitimately say, no, this is better kept in the hands of the medical professionals?
Well, it's very hard to discuss this without talking about parental rights because, of course, when we're looking at the medicine behind it, the neurological degenerative condition Alfie Evans had is so rare, there's very little that we know about what was going on. And of course, there's very little that we actually know about the human brain in contrast to what we do know in the first place. So essentially, this was the doctors deciding that Alfie Evans could not be kept alive. It was the doctors deciding that it would be cruel, even though he was in a coma, to continue to keep him alive. And then it was a judge without medical training concurring with that opinion and overriding the wishes of the parents.
So what does this say about parental rights in the context of, if I can put it broadly, of Western culture? I mean, this happened in Great Britain, you know, most of our Canadian laws are based on that. Should parents here be worried when they check their kid into a hospital that the kid may never come out?
Well, it's very interesting because you said you were trying to wrap your head around it. I think that's where most people are at, even, you know, people who don't, who wouldn't share our ethical views on a lot of things regarding medicine, because there was another hospital, a very good hospital, that was willing to take him. There were other doctors willing to give him treatment. And if the opinion of the Alder Hey doctors was that there was nothing that could be done, why did it make a difference to them? Why couldn't he be released to go to another very reputable hospital? And if his condition was terminal, as everybody seemed to believe, there's nothing wrong with that case being terminal in a different hospital with different medical professionals. And so one of the reasons it's worrisome, especially in the UK, is this sort of thing has happened a number of times. And sometimes it's difficult to say if this is medical overreach or legal overreach, because a lot of your listeners probably remember the case of little Charlie Gard. I wrote about that a lot at the time. The case is almost identical to Alfie Evans, except for the fact that the condition was different. And I think the worst case of legal injustice and medical injustice fusing together was a judge a few years ago from the family court in Britain who actually mandated that a disabled girl have an abortion, even though she didn't want one. He mandated an abortion against her will because he decided that this was best for her. So you very much have this view in Britain that the state knows better than the parents, and I think that this should lend us as Canadians a bit of foresight into what happens if we allow government to grow too big and if we allow even a shred of parental rights to be removed from us.
And that comes back to my original question. You know, should parents in Canada be worried when they check their kids into a hospital? Are we on the verge of that kind of thinking here?
Well, I think that we have a situation developing that might put us there eventually. I'm not aware of any situations in Canada where this has happened yet, so I'm reticent to say that we're in the same situation, but we see what takes place. As you pointed out, Britain has the same laws that we do, or has the same sort of system that we do, but these things develop very, very quickly. In Canada, we see the cases of parental rights being threatened in terms of the bill here in Ontario that essentially indicated the Ontario government might be able to take kids away from parents if those children decided to medically transition and the parents were opposed to that. A lot of people are saying, no, 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 the law can't be read that way. But if we take a look at the U.S., these laws can be read that way very, very quickly if you get a judge who decides to read them that way. So I think that our battle for parental rights is on different fronts for the moment, but could spread to the front of medicine very quickly.
And I guess that leads to the final question. What can we do? I mean, we sit and we watch the Alfie Evans case from a distance and we go, oh, you know, that's really terrible. How do we engage in this particular discussion here in Canada in the context we have today?
Find out the organizations that are fighting for parental rights and give them your support. These organizations have to represent real people who are keeping track of the events, whether that be ARPA, the organization I work for. We try to raise awareness around the abortion issue. In terms of conscience rights, it would be Physicians for Life. You name it, these organizations need support. They need people behind them. And these organizations, quite frankly, are often the only thing standing in between Canadians and situations like those that unfolded in Great Britain.
Jonathan, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.